Welcome back to season two of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 87th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how's it going?
Kyle, I'm hungry for some chef. How are you doing?
I'm good too. Yeah, this movie does have that
food.
It should have a warning. But it should have a warning where if you are going in, don't be hungry because fucking hell, there is so much good looking food in it.
Or be hungry and get a heightened hunger afterwards. But the problem, you have to sit with that for the entire length of the movie because they start you out on some pretty cooking picks. So like, you're in for the long haul, but that food's going to be so good afterwards. Oh my God.
Or you'll just be incredibly disappointed when you try to make a grilled cheese and it does not live up to that of Carl Casper's.
Doesn't have that golden brown crunch on the outside of it. Oh my God.
Did you watch anything in the last week?
Nothing heavy. My girlfriend and I finished Is It Cake?
Cool.
I can report back some was cake. Every episode, some of that was cake. But that's like the only thing I've actually watched in the last little while.
Nice.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's cake. Not all of it, but some of it certifiably cake. And I love when there's like a contest show of this caliber because the guest judges they bring on. There's like a couple people whose names have done things. And then there's a couple people they made up. Like, like their big get in the final episode are still like the least famous members of things. And I love it. I think like Carly Rae Jepsen was the biggest. No, it was Rebecca Black. I have those two confused.
That's pretty cool, actually.
They live in the same mental space for me. It was Rebecca Black. And I was like, oh, that was not the final. I'm not going to reveal the final judges. But that was one of the season judges. And I was like, oh, good for them. They got Rebecca Black.
I feel like we could get Rebecca Black. She's like...
Oh, we probably could. Is It Cake could get her. I think we're okay. How about you, Kyle? What did you watch this last week?
Wow, did I ever do some watch? So the first thing that I watched was on the Saturday after we recorded. And I saw Lightyear.
Right. How was that?
It was pretty good.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was one of those Pixar movies where I would say it does not go to infinity and beyond, but it does reach the acceptable level of quality that you would expect from an animated Disney movie.
That makes sense. Yeah. Although I feel like going to infinity and beyond would be the one stated goal that movie has. So that doesn't do so great.
Yeah. No, but it's like, it's really safe. That's the one like kind of good thing and criticism about it is it's like really by the numbers in a sense.
Yeah.
It doesn't really try to make a huge commentary in any way. Like it's just learn how to be a team. That's kind of it.
Yeah. So if you didn't know before, you could become a team by watching Buzz Lightyear.
It's a good one to watch at home, I think.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
So not one to rush out to, but still good.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of excited. I imagine that's going to be streaming, if not already, then sometime soon.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It'll be on Disney Plus before you know it. Speaking of Disney Plus, though, Obi-Wan finished.
What are your thoughts?
As a whole, it wasn't the most amazing thing to me. But the finale fucking kicked ass.
Nice.
Like the main part of it is like Obi-Wan and Vader, obviously.
Kiss.
That's kind of, yes.
Nice. Oh, yeah. All right. Huge. I'm tuning in. I'm leaving. I'm cutting mid-recording. I want to see him smooch. It was always a will they, won't they that I wanted to see come to fruition.
Yeah. But no, like their ultimate confrontation is fucking epic. It's nice. So cool. And it's like really well choreographed. And just badass. Like, this is how I wanted to see Obi-Wan and Vader. Like, this is just like peak Obi-Wan and Vader. But like the rest of it, yeah, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's like overall as a show, okay. I think there's a really solid 2.5 to 3 hour movie in this 6-episode show.
I've heard that because I'm imagining it fell victim to some of like the streaming show pacing where there's a lot of lull parts and it doesn't really set itself up for like as tight of arcs as like traditional television would, even though it released on a weekly schedule, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So that's kind of interesting because you think they would actually kind of tighten that up.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. But yeah, somebody will do it. Somebody will do that edit and then maybe I'll watch it. Probably won't though. And then the last like new movie I watched, I saw it today, was The Black Phone from Scott Derrickson starring Ethan Hawke. It's a good movie.
Nice.
Don't go in expecting a horror movie, though. It is definitely more of a thriller with like some supernatural elements to it. Mm-hmm. But because it had some supernatural elements to it, I was always expecting kind of like a rug pull in maybe the third act that related to this supernatural element of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there never really was.
Interesting.
And so it just kind of like wrapped up kind of as you would expect.
Oh.
And that's good, I guess. Like it was a satisfying enough ending, but like I just didn't really feel all that like amazed going out of it.
Yeah.
Like it's really well regarded so far, and that's why I was eager to go see it. But overall, like it's just a fine movie, a fine thriller, fine kidnapping story.
Because they've really marketed this as like a good horror movie.
Yeah.
And like if you watch the trailer, that's kind of the idea that you get is that it's a horror movie. And I also expected some like Shyamalanian twist to happen in it. It just seemed set up for that. Like, oh, the call is actually your grandma checking in on you. You're at home eating a tray of cookies. Like I kind of thought there'd be like some big kind of like almost formulaic setup to it with like an unexpected twist, but you know there's going to be some kind of twist.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the twist is, Kyle, there's no twist.
Wow. I mean, there's an 8-year-old girl that says, "What the fuck, Jesus," in it.
Oh,
which is probably the best part.
Was she speaking to Jesus at the point?
Yeah. So she was a good character, but overall, movie, pretty good.
Yeah. Nice. Didn't phone it in.
I did watch two other movies though last night. I was pretty busy.
You're a fiend.
And it was because of the impending pressure that we only have 5 more movies
to live. We die at the end of season 2.
And so I was like, shit, I had to do some other watching of movies that we're not going to talk about. And the two movies that I watched were Still Alice and Predestination.
Oh.
Still Alice took home the Best Actress winner of this year. And so that's kind of why I wanted to watch it. I'm glad we didn't talk about it because overall, I don't think there was that much that we would have had to say about it beyond Julianne Moore's performance.
Mm-hmm.
Because she really kills it as a woman in her 50s who gets early onset Alzheimer's. And just like her kind of going through that decline and how it affects her family because it's like paternal. Is that the word?
Maternal for motherly, paternal for fatherly.
Yeah,
that's what you're looking for.
You can be passed down to her children, essentially.
Yeah.
And so there's like conflict with that. And overall, good movie.
Yeah.
Hard to watch parts of it because obviously it's like, mm-hmm. I think it might be a true story or based on a book or something. Obviously, probably based on someone's real life experience because a lot of people have this disease and it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Julianne Moore, probably the best thing to come out of that. Obviously, she won an award for that.
Yep.
But that's kind of it. Predestination was good as well. It was a very interesting movie. It was like a sci-fi about time travel. And there was some kind of weird stuff happening.
Hmm.
I don't really know how to explain it without giving it away.
Interesting.
But the results of all of the time meddling was like strangely taboo. And the choices that people made was a little bit... incesty? I don't know how way to describe that. But it was very interesting, that's for sure. And it was like a short movie, like 90 minutes, so not hard to watch.
Was that, Kyle, did you just watch like the porn parody of it? Was this? It was on this weird website called X Hamster.
Maybe we watched Peen Destination. Starring Ethan Koch.
That was better.
Yeah, okay.
Man, I dislike time travel movies.
Really?
There are movies that use time travel that I don't hate, but for the most part, whenever a movie's based on time traveling, something about it just ticks me off. It was fine in Interstellar.
Yeah.
Honestly, I kind of dug it.
Yeah.
But because it was such a very small linear part of the storyline, it's when they go back and change things that always frustrates me because there's always the like, well, why did they do that? They could have done that. Mm-hmm. Like with the Avengers, why did they choose all the worst times to travel back to get the Infinity Stones when there are large periods of times where it's easier to grab them? Stuff like that always bothers me. And I don't want to think about, well, why did they go back in time to have sex with their siblings? I don't need to know. Is it, or is it like, answer? Like grandparents? Is this like Back to the Future kind of like previous generation thing?
No. It's much weirder than that.
I'll say that. Yeah. Well, I'm probably not going to watch that one then.
Okay. Well, I'll explain it to you after the episode. Okay,
good. I have delicate sensibilities, so I will not be partaking in that filth.
All right. Well, other than that, the only other movie I watched this week was the one we're talking about this episode. And of course, season two of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2014. And so for episode 21, we're talking about Chef. You hadn't seen this before.
I have not seen Human Etui before. This was my first time with it. But you have, and I know this is a big one for you.
Oh, yes. I love this movie. That's a little pre-thoughts ahead of my reviews of this movie. I fucking love this movie. Mm-hmm. It just makes me happy. It's easy to watch constantly. It's like easy to rewatch. It's just one of those, like, it's like Paddington in the way where it is like a bundle of joy type movie.
Yes.
Where, like, if you're having a hard day, this is a great movie to throw on.
Yeah, watch a guy get fired. Watch a guy not connect with his son.
Yeah.
You'll feel better for it by the end.
I don't remember the first time I watched it. Mm-hmm. I don't think I saw it in theaters. And I was watching some interviews with Jon Favreau about it afterwards. And I think they dropped this in the summer season, which was a bad idea. Because, like, I mean, it is kind of a summery movie, which makes sense seasonally. But they dropped it within, like, all the superhero movies, like Captain America and Guardians were happening around this time.
Yeah.
And so that was probably not the best thing.
This would have been a good winter escape movie.
Yeah.
If this was, like, you're going in from the cold and dreaming of Miami. Oh, that would be incredible. In the summer, you're already kind of warm. And this is a sweaty kind of movie. Like, it's the kind of movie everyone's sweating. And you're seeing that on screen. You're kind of sweating a little bit. The heat's turned up.
Yeah, and I didn't realize this when we were doing the schedule, but yeah, this is a back-to-back ScarJo double whammy, because you get a little ScarJo in last episode. Well, I mean, a lot of ScarJo,
ScarJo.
And then we get a good amount of ScarJo in this episode.
Yeah, wow. Very different things being eaten, though.
Yes, very much so. All right. Well, if you were interested in Chef, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general links to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen Chef yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
Chef is a 2014 American road comedy drama film, and also the equivalent of making a movie about the kind of argument you have in a shower after a bad day, for Jon Favreau at least. This is directed by Jon Favreau, written by Jon Favreau, starring Jon Favreau as Carl Casper, Sofia Vergara as Inez, John Leguizamo as Martin, Scarlett Johansson as Molly, Dustin Hoffman as some asshole named Riva, and MJ Anthony as Percy. It has a runtime of 115 minutes and was released on May 9th, 2014. So, Kyle, you've kind of gushed about it a little bit.
Yeah.
What did you think specifically on this rewatch?
Still love it.
Oh, nothing's changed?
I don't think so. I feel like I was more receptive to the fact that the last hour is very fluffy.
Yeah.
It is pretty much completely void of conflict.
Yeah, absolute victory lap.
Yeah.
Just going for a nice little walk in the park.
Yeah. And I did notice that, like, my kind of active engagement in terms of, like, how often I was laughing or just, like, gleefully staring at the screen did sort of have a decline as it hit that sort of constant fluffiness.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he's in that crisis mode, fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But what did you think of it?
I wish they went a little bit further in a lot of directions.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, this never really had any laugh moments.
Really?
This had maybe one or two. This had a lot of smile moments. This filled me with warmth. Don't get me wrong. I was a little smiley boy with big old rosy red cheeks watching this thing because it filled my belly with happiness and joy. Mm-hmm. But it was very safe. There is minimal conflict, and the conflict that does happen is kind of played up in, like, a slapstick kind of way almost, especially with that lava cake scene. It's
That's
molten.
My favorite scene. I have that on my, like, YouTube watch later list ever since I watched the movie again, because I can't help but go back to it. It's so funny.
That was, like, the big scene.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's not particularly daring. Mm. There's not much conflict, which I don't think is really a big issue with this movie. It doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of just like a warm, happy movie. He doesn't have to have like some big crisis, and he doesn't need to have some like massive depressive episode after getting fired. Like, it still, it works plot wise.
Yeah.
I just wish they filled it with more.
That's fair. Yeah. Like, I totally agree with that. It is. I mean, I made the comparison to Paddington earlier, but it is very much like that, where a lot of your enjoyment is just kind of like watching these characters in their element, but it definitely could have used a little bit more conflict at times.
Mm-hmm. This could have used more Paddington because it's a little light.
All right. Well, did you want me to read through the plot?
Why don't you hit us with the plot, Kyle?
Right, I'm going to go straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Chef. Miami-born Carl Casper is the head chef of Galois in Brentwood, Los Angeles. While popular with his kitchen staff and hostess Molly, Carl clashes with the restaurant's owner, Riva, who wants him to stick to classical cuisine rather than innovative dishes. Carl also has a strained relationship with his tech-savvy preteen son, Percy, and his rich ex-wife, Inez. When Carl has the chance to serve prestigious food critic and blogger Ramsay Michel, Riva demands to he prepare old favorites at the last minute. Carl concedes, leading to a scathing review. Carl insults Ramsay on Twitter, not realizing that his reply is public, and gains a large online following. Carl comes up with a new menu that his staff loves and invites Ramsay back for a rematch, but it leaves after confronting Riva, who still wants the old menu. At home, Carl prepares the menu he wanted, while his sous chef Tony serves Ramsay the same dish from his prior visit. Ramsay tweets negatively about Carl, provoking Carl into confronting him at the restaurant. Videos of Carl's meltdown go viral, leaving him humiliated and unemployable. Carl reluctantly accepts Inez's invitation to accompany her and Percy to Miami, where he rediscovers his love for Cuban cuisine. At Inez's encouragement, her ex-husband Marvin offers Carl a food truck. Carl and Percy bond while restoring the rundown food truck and by buying groceries, and Carl gives him a chef's knife of his own. Martin, Carl's friend and former line cook, turns down his promotion at Galois to join Carl, who has reignited his passion as a chef. Carl, Martin, and Percy drive the truck along the country to Los Angeles, serving Cuban sandwiches and yuca fries. Percy promotes them on social media, and they find success in New Orleans and Austin, where their daily specials include po' boys and barbecued brisket made with local ingredients. Back in Los Angeles, having strengthened his relationship with Percy, Carl accepts his son's offer to help with the food truck, with Inez also joining with them. Ramsay, the critic, visits the truck to explain his bad review. Though an early fan of Carl, he was disappointed by a meal he felt was beneath Carl's skills. Impressed with the chef's return to form, Ramsay offers to bankroll a new restaurant where Carl will have full creative control. 6 months later, the successful new restaurant is closed for a private event, which is Carl and Inez's remarriage ceremony. But that's Chef.
Oh, wow. Thanks for serving up that big old plot summary, Kyle. Well done.
Is this the best movie to feature a Twitter feud?
I can't think of a better one. I think for a lack of competition, it damn well might be.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't hate how they showed social media in this movie, because normally it's painfully cringy when they talk about things going viral. Mm-hmm. I'm a little dubious about if a review of a restaurant could ever go viral in the way that this movie has it happen, but they need it for the plot. I'm willing to overlook it. Honestly, it was kind of fine, and I'm glad that they showed Casper not fully understanding it. Mm-hmm. I think that worked to its favor.
Yes, definitely. I mean, the critic Ramsay, he's got some zingers.
He kind of does have some heat.
He absolutely digs into it. I wrote down one of his replies to Casper's tweet, where he's like, "You wouldn't know a good meal if it sat on your face." It is verbatim, "I would rather have you sit on my face after a brisk walk on a warm day than suffer through that fucking lava cake again." Fuck me. And especially after going after, I mean, that was a bit shallow, but going after his like weight gain.
Yeah.
That was a bit low, but I mean, like, you can know where his head was at.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, Casper stepped into the ring with a pro. He didn't realize what was going on. Clearly, he just wanted to send like a little hate mail to someone. Yeah. Yeah. But like he underhand lobbed that ball to the to Ramsay, reviewer as he had like three baseball bats in his hands all swinging. He deserved that clap back.
And Ramsay even says that to him later, like when he goes to the food truck, he's like, "What did you think you were doing? You were coming into like my game, like this is my field."
Yeah.
And you think that you were gonna like what, get me? Oh,
like, yeah, with like nothing even. You would know a good meal if it was in your face. Like, that's so weak.
Yeah.
You got to bring a bigger game than that.
But we talked a little bit about the fucking molten scene, but mm-hmm. Jon Favreau fucking crushes that scene.
He sells it.
He commits. I feel like a lot of that was improvisational because of the caliber of actors you have in this movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, even just like with the subject matter, like, it's very easy to play around and try different things and, mm-hmm. and improvise. Like, these guys all have chemistry with each other, like through the Marvel movies, obviously Scarlett Johansson and Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau and everybody in that sort of area. Mm-hmm. So like, there's room to play, but you could tell like he was given his 110% during that lava cake scene.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love that this is an indie movie because it's the indie movie that can only be made by a massive Hollywood producer who doesn't care about money anymore. Like, this is an yep. indie movie with some of the biggest names in the game,
yep.
like acting in it.
Yeah. Did you pick up on the big allegory for this being essentially about Jon Favreau in a autobiographical sense while using food and chef culture as like a replacement for movie making?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of like, while I was watching, clearly this is a one man therapy session.
Yeah.
So like, as I was digging around, I saw that this was shortly after the Iron Man 2 flopperino. Yeah. And they do some fun like references to it with like when him and his son go to see a movie, they have the Iron Man sounds yeah. going on in the movie theater. But like, you can kind of tell that this is, even though food's in there, it's not about the food.
Yeah.
This is about Jon Favreau's career in a much different way.
Yep.
But I think if anything, knowing that about the movie kind of added to it.
Yes.
Because that does help give it some more material when you know that like everything on the screen is him just working through something.
Yeah.
And it's not really about the, like, it is about the food, obviously,
yeah.
but it's about a little bit more than the food. And you can kind of pick up on that and give it some more meat from knowing that.
Yeah, knowing the context does elevate the movie a little bit too. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's been shy of like acknowledging that fact. Because
no.
like, I was watching an interview and they basically ask him explicitly, and obviously, yes, like, you're going to take a piece of your personal experience into that. And when critics were absolutely shitting on him for mm-hmm. Iron Man 2, or people that were just like disappointed because they had these high expectations because he has a history of quality of work, and then it wasn't to their standards, that's like also kind of hits hard too. And like, also helps that Robert Downey Jr. and Scarlett Johansson are both in this movie.
Yeah.
Especially Scarlett Johansson, who doesn't like leave the restaurant with him. Mm-hmm. She stays alongside Reva and Tony when they stay in there. And I mean, it's not like Scarlett Johansson was going to leave the Marvel ship because Jon Favreau wasn't directing the Avengers. Cause I think that was something that was going to happen.
Yeah. From what I've heard, he was originally slated to direct a bunch more of Marvel movies, including the Avengers. And
yeah.
then he, I guess, somewhat walked away from directing it specifically, but
yeah.
still helped produce it.
Yeah.
He was definitely a producer for a long time running.
Mm-hmm. And he still starred in all the Iron Man and even the Avengers movies as like Happy Hogan, which is
yeah.
the character he put himself in the movie as. But I mean, Reva essentially is that demanding studio that's just like breathing down the neck saying, hey, we're going to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to be an artist. Like, he literally in the movie says like, well, now you want to be an artist.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to give him the hits basically. And so like, yeah, it all plays out really well. I think the food representation, the allegory works really well with that. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, especially with like the scene where he does quit, where Dustin Hoffman walks in and is like, we've sold out more seats than ever for this menu.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically like winking at the screen that like, we have more people buying tickets to these Avengers movies than we've ever done before.
Yep.
It's pretty thin, but I think it works better because of that. He didn't
yeah.
really try to hide it, which gives it some more depth.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end, he gets bankrolled by somebody to make, you know, a bigger thing.
Yeah.
That still has his creative control. And look at him fucking now.
Yeah.
Look at him.
He recovered.
Yeah.
He's doing better.
Yeah. He's like the fucking quarterback of new Star Wars on TV. Like,
yeah,
he's fine, guys.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we got this movie as a result of Iron Man 2. In
Me
a sense.
Too. This is the best thing to come out of Iron Man 2 by a lot. Actually, I didn't hate Iron Man 2.
No,
I
don't hate
it. It was just fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to shit on it too much, honestly. It was okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what did you think about the father-son relationship? Because I kind of felt it's been done so many times and this did not have a special twist on it. Like, it was, I still cared about it because also the actor for Percy, very good for a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
I think 10. Yeah.
I think
probably 10.
Wikipedia says it's preteen, but I'm sure he's like 10, 11, yeah, something like that.
Something like that. I thought he had a good performance, but I kind of felt like that dynamic was just like, this is not a special take on that at all.
Yeah.
And when the interesting part is the arc about his career, that kind of gets brushed aside. I think just to give it a more complete, like, emotional conclusion, but I didn't really care that much about the father-son bond getting fixed when, like, you know it was going to happen, and it didn't start off even really that resentful.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of sad.
No, that was one thing I would say is, like, I know that his character is probably representation of what 11 or 12 year olds would be at that time, where they're kind of just like, oh no, that's fine. Or I'm just going to, you know, go on my iPad, or did you do this? Did you do that? Or, like, you know, kind of like nonchalant about their feelings.
Yeah.
And so that made sense, but it also, like, didn't make it more exciting because they're just like having conversations and he's kind of just like whatever about things.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously he gets excited, but, like, he never really gets that sad until he's told that he's not going to be on the food truck anymore.
Yeah.
And that was, like, at the end of the movie, and in the next scene it's resolved anyway. So
yeah. And I think, like, one of the biggest gripes I have with this, kind of rolled into that, is that no other character really has much going on or an arc to them outside of Jon Favreau's character, yeah, who's obviously the main big deal of the movie. But, like,
yeah,
his ex-wife is the same starting at the end.
Yep.
Scarlett Johansson is forgotten about a little bit into the movie.
Yep.
I mean, his one chef does become the head chef of that one restaurant, wow, that we learn doesn't let the chef have any creative control whatsoever anyways. Yep. And then his number two, who finally got promoted to sous chef, he quits.
Yeah.
To join Jon Favreau. So, like, it, yeah, it's lightweight.
Yes.
There's not necessarily anything wrong with a lightweight, good shots of food, warm you up movie, but I felt like overall it's light.
Yeah.
It's a little weak, but it still, it brings some happiness.
Yeah. I love this scene, which may be resemblant of your opinion on this movie, where Jon Favreau is cooking a grilled cheese and he's giving it fucking everything.
He's
buttering the edges. He's giving it layers of different types of cheese, cutting it in half and handing him, his son, this beautiful oozing golden grilled cheese. And he's like, it's good.
Yeah.
That's all his son has to say about it.
Mom cuts a crust off, so this is subpar. You piece of shit. I would have loved to see him hop on Twitter and give, like, the same review that the critic did. This fat idiot's lost his edge. Oh, unlike my sandwich, which has it fully on, may I add.
Oh, great. What did you think of the Robert Downey Jr. scene?
I didn't really like it. It was kind of like, all right, Robert Downey Jr., we're going to have you be a misogynist who gives Casper money.
Yeah.
And then just be Iron Man again. Really, you know, just do that thing again,
yep,
in a different movie. And then don't show up. You don't need to after that. You're kind of just there to hand over some money.
Yeah. He is essentially like a glorified cameo. And, like, I always found that I wanted that scene to be, like, more exciting, but it never is.
No, it really isn't.
Yeah. It's just, like, essentially a very fluffed up scene to get him the food truck.
Yeah.
And where it should be, like, the kind of a low moment for Carl in a sense, because he is at his lowest. He's going to his ex-wife's ex-husband to get a food truck so that he can then start to support himself again and maybe find his groove. And it ends up just being kind of, like, weird.
Yeah.
Just weird. Yeah.
And, like, I kind of thought that he would get the food truck by going down to visit his ex's dad, which would still have the same effect of your, you know, you came to your ex-wife's dad for support, which doesn't look fun.
Yeah.
Clearly his ex-wife is loaded.
Oh,
you look at that house, like, you already have a reason for there to be enough money to get this thing for free for him. I don't know why we needed Robert Downey Jr. to make weird conversation about maybe or maybe not getting a secretary pregnant. It just seemed weird.
And also maybe or maybe not having sex with his ex-wife after Carl and his ex-wife divorced.
Like, why was there added beef in there for that? I don't know.
It was just weird. And I feel like this was a largely improvisational scene.
Oh,
and it kind of like showed in a bad way.
Yeah, because you can kind of see Robert Downey Jr.'s thought process of, I'm going to start with the normal done before thing of, I am a sexist who got who had sex with my secretary.
Yeah.
And then you see for him think from it, but what if I'm not? And then he tries that for a little bit, thinks, no, I think I am. Yeah. Let's keep it safe here. This isn't going great.
Yeah. And props to Jon Favreau for hiring Sofia Vergara as his ex-wife.
Good
and
move.
Scarlett Johansson as his fling.
Big respect. Like, gotta recognize that game. Like,
gorgeous women. And yeah. I mean, good for him.
I mean, you see him cook for Scarlett Johansson? True.
That was a very horny scene.
I felt as Scarlett Johansson did in that scene. I was sizing him up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, man, if I could get food like that every day, don't know if there's a thing I wouldn't do.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
we've shared our opinions on it. What do you think critics and audiences around the globe are saying?
I think it's largely positive.
Uh-huh.
Because of some of the, you know, issues we've mentioned, it being very light and fluffy, I don't know if it's going to be that high critically. Maybe like an 82, 81, and then audiences I could see going a bit higher, like a 90 maybe.
Not bad. The critics gave it an 87.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, the critics actually enjoyed this one, unlike his shitty Unimaginative Food. The audience is 85, a little bit lower, but like they're pretty in agreement on that.
Yeah, that's fair.
IMDb has given this a 7.3 and Metacritic a 68.
Oh, that seems a little low, but...
Yeah, especially with like the Rotten Tomato score being significantly higher.
Yeah.
In terms of money, this has a box office of $47 million on a budget of $11 million.
Not bad, not bad.
Yep. Like an unfinished meal, it's got a box going.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people saw this movie on streaming. Like a lot of people found it on Netflix afterwards. And Netflix has The Chef Show now, which is like essentially a generic food show with Jon Favreau and Roy Choi, who is like the guy that Jon learned cooking from.
Yeah. And as the movie went along, he actually got a bigger part in producing it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I think this was kind of where his like celebrity was growing, because he was already like a big food celebrity, the Roy Choi. But then like he kind of got heavy into TV after that as well.
Good for him.
Yeah. This finished 129th at the box office.
Yeah.
Which technically is an independent movie.
Yeah.
So not bad.
I mean, I'm surprised that Robert Downey Jr.'s cameo didn't boost this budget onto like 40 to 50 million, because that guy just wants so much money.
Yeah. I wonder if after he gave his performance, he was like, I'm going to take a cut.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you a little back.
Some of that, actually.
I mean, with the caliber of actors you have in this movie, granted, a lot of them aren't in a large majority of the movie, but still, like Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
Like that, he's like a small role, but still, like, that's fucking Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. I wonder if a lot of this was just like Jon Favreau was making a small movie on his own to kind of come over some things.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw him a bone.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that the casting director was Sarah Haley Finn, who is the casting director for all Marvel and Star Wars projects at Disney.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't make that connection.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably a MCU obsessive observation, but
I wasn't going to say that.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was probably an easy casting job for her, because John was probably like, hey, Robert, hey, Scarlett. I mean, in terms of like John Leguizamo and obviously the kid, like there was like some extra casting that you would have to do. And Dustin Hoffman, that's a good get. Like,
that's a good get. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm surprised the budget wasn't higher.
Honestly, yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. But what do we think for our scores? Kyle, we're going to start off with your score for enjoyment.
I have a 4.5 on enjoyment.
Nice. I myself am going to slap this down a 3.5. I had a good time watching it. It just didn't hit the heights that I was maybe hoping. What is your craft?
I'm going to give it a 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is very well shot, very well directed. The sets are cool. The truck is great.
Yeah.
The score, awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
And the way they shoot food and they like I mentioned, I was watching an interview with them. And obviously when you're shooting food, like food is associated with taste and you can't taste the food that's on the screen. Mm-hmm. So you have to make people want to eat it and feel that feeling through like sound and visuals.
Yeah.
And they really, really crush it with that.
Absolutely. I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly. I'm also slapping this down a 4. It's just kind of a fun soundtrack.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. It's just a lot of it is a good time. This is where the good times really show, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Is what they're throwing on the screen for you. It's your execution.
I gave it a 4. I think it's largely well acted, well written for the most part. I think that last little bit maybe is a little fluffy and some of the performances are just fine.
Yeah.
but most of the time, really good. And obviously, I think a whole point of that was just for Jon Favreau in the fucking molten scene.
I'm going to slide this a 3.5. I was thinking quite a bit between 3 and 3.5.
Yeah.
But I think the overarching warmth and good feeling it fills you with is going to kick it up to a 3.5.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. The writing's a little shallow. Mm-hmm. There's not the most going on in this movie, but they put a good, fun product on screen.
Yeah.
That's what movies are about, baby. That's a 3.5. And finally, your rewatch ability.
For me, this is a 4.5. This is a movie I will always tell people they need to watch if they haven't seen it. It is a movie that I will religiously rewatch and will not ever be bored of it. It is just a great time. And I want more good food movies.
Yeah.
Like maybe that's the niche that I like love the most secretly. There's just not enough of them.
Well, you very openly love Ratatouille. There's no secret about that.
Well, yeah. And like this is another great quality cooking movie, and I just fucking love it. Something about food and movies, it just works, man.
Well, you love movies, and check this, you love food. It's a match made in heaven. You're a good cook too.
Yeah,
I just need to see you make a movie, see if it's as tasty. I'm making this a 3 for rewatchability.
Sure.
I'm very glad I gave this a first watch.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm ever gonna throw this on myself. Maybe if this was on, I'm watching though.
Yeah,
that's kind of the key. If anyone put this on, I'm gonna sit there and watch it.
Cool.
Well, for final scores, Kyle, you're going to be giving this a 17 out of 20 for an 85%. You liking that? And I'm giving this a 14 out of 20 for a 70%. I'm good with it. Yeah. It's there.
It's good.
It's good. Ranking time. Kyle, want me to read yours?
Sure.
All right. Grand Budapest, Paddington, Captain America, Guardians, Dawn, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, Under the Skin, Lego, Selma, John Wick, What We Do in the Shadows, Boyhood, Snowpiercer, Babadook, Imitation Game, Big Hero 6, Foxcatcher, American Sniper, The Theory of Everything.
This is my new number 7 over Gone Girl and under Interstellar. I had to give a lot of time to think about this, and I'm glad that I did it before the episode because I would have just been sat there staring at this screen for a long time because I really had to think what the core qualities that I would rank them on would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it also comes down to enjoyment and mostly rewatchability as well.
Yeah.
And when I looked at it and I got to Gone Girl Nightcrawler area, I was like, it's just an easier movie to sit and enjoy, and that's probably where I'm going to land it.
Probably where it's going to be at.
Yep.
That's fair. You? Well, I'll just go through mine real quick.
Yeah.
Grand Budapest, Paddington, Dawn, Interstellar, Gone Girl, Nightcrawler, John Wick, Selma, Guardians of the Galaxy, What We Do in the Shadows, Under the Skin, Lego, Babadook, Captain America, Winter Soldier, Snowpiercer, Boyhood, Big Hero 6, The Theory of Everything, Imitation Game, Foxcatcher, American Sniper. I'm going to be a bit lower.
Yes.
But I'm going to be slapping this under the Skin, above Lego.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good.
Lego finishing lower than I thought it would so far.
Yeah.
But movies come in that just kind of bump it down for other aspects.
Yep.
But Chef is going to be my new number 12.
Great.
For now. We'll see about that.
Honestly, RIP any movie in the top like little while, or like especially at the bottom, because this next stretch, holy
they're getting
sweet
pushed.
Mother of God.
They're getting shoved down. The Theory of Everything thinks it's low now. Just you wait, buddy. You ready for some fun Letterbox times?
Oh yeah, for right. Sure.
It's not here. It's not this movie. This has a 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd and some of the worst reviews I've seen. This movie deserved better than that. I'm not even that huge on this movie. Audience out there, we need to look at ourselves and say, what the fuck did we do in this review section? The reviews that were supposed to be funny, they fucking sucked.
Oh no.
The jokes in there, they were bad. I found one review that was maybe worth writing down and highlighting. Okay. So I'm going to say it and then we're going to move on.
All right.
We're not going to give it any further thought to the fun Letterbox reviews. Jaxi, 5 stars. No stakes, no drama, no real plot, just Cubanos and good vibes. And yet, a perfect movie.
Yep. Kind of the feelings. Yep.
That's Letterboxd for you. All right. Awards detail.
Great.
At the Academy Awards. No, it didn't.
Yes.
It was not.
Yeah. I don't know what it could have gotten.
I don't know if it
was
needed anything.
I was thought about like score, but it's not score mostly. It's mostly music, and that doesn't really work for score.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It didn't need anything.
I don't think
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
If there were food categories, it would be competing. Yeah. It'd be swing with the big dogs.
Definitely.
But there's not, so it just didn't. Mm-hmm. Other notable awards, no. No, it didn't. This is not an awards kind of movie.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
It didn't do anything so good that it beat other movies. It just did a bunch of things enjoyably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So awards, don't think so. Interesting facts, Kyle. First of all, there's not...
Oh,
this movie
wow.
is devoid of background interest other wow. than it's one man getting mad at his last job. That's really the only interesting thing about it. But something's worth mentioning. Promotional events centering on the fictional Cubano-serving El Jefe proved to be so popular that Favreau and Los Angeles-based chef Roy Choi, who consulted on the film, have opened a series of pop-up restaurants and announced that they're thinking about making the track permanent.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. That's
good something. For them.
Jon Favreau did his own cooking by training with Chef Roy Choi. Choi sent Favreau to a week of intensive French culinary school where Favreau sharpened his knife skills and learned how to make sauces. Quote from Roy Choi, "I brought him into the kitchen and he just kind of fit in," Choi recalls. "I threw him a couple of tests, like a case of chives or a case of onions or peel two cases of avocados, just to see where his mind and his situation and his abilities were and how interested he was in these things. He just attacked them. He really became part of it." Eventually, 5 years after this film release, Favreau and Choi teamed up again on The Chef's Show, which is a cooking documentary show on Netflix.
Good for them.
Those are facts. A couple more here, still mostly about the cooking. Roy Choi only agreed to train Jon Favreau to cook if Favreau promised to be absolutely authentic in his portrayal of a professional chef. From the way that his character Carl folds the towels at the beginning of the movie to the way in which he cleans his station. His training was designed to keep Favreau focused on the smallest of details and to serve as a method acting exercise in order to understand the mindset of a professional chef who must be persistently detailed focused in a pressurized environment.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, more on that. According to Jon Favreau, Twitter paid nothing for product placement or advertising. In a Hollywood Reporter article, Favreau reported that the company requested only that some tweaks be made to the look of the animated logo before signing off on the use of its product.
Cool.
Yep.
I mean, I liked how they show the tweets in it.
Yeah, I think that was actually pretty good.
Kind of flair.
But. Yep. And last one. Oh, boy. This is the first non-Iron Man collaboration between writer and director Jon Favreau and Robert Downey Jr. This is what I was going for. This is what I had. And like, I knew there was no Letterboxd review, so I added more. They kept getting lamer. No. You got Twitter. It was fine with it. And Robert Downer Jr. is in this. What? Robert Downer Jr.? Robert Downer Jr. is in this movie. It's not Iron Man. That was a fact.
That's so funny.
Oh my God. Kyle, do you have anything else to think about this movie that you'd like to vocalize to people listening?
No. I mean, I feel like if you were wanting to get a sense of what this movie is about, Google the lava cake confrontation scene on YouTube and watch it, because it's got some of my favorite shit in there. I like when he's just like, "What do? You just write shit? You just make shit up? That shit was molten." Oh, it's so good.
That is the highlight of the movie.
It is.
And, like, you need to get there for it to work, but like also, It's still good after that point.
Yeah.
But if you really enjoyed that and you have something else to do, maybe you hit pause and go do that thing. I don't know. I didn't hate it, but like, that's clearly a peak.
Yeah.
And it's pretty early in.
Yeah.
It's still good after.
It's still good.
It's still good after.
Yeah. Check it out.
Check it out.
Final thoughts for you?
No, I think I've said my piece. I'm going to say one more thing though. It's like a warm soup on a cold day.
Yep.
But there's a little less meat in the soup than you thought going in.
Hmm.
That's my take on Chef.
Good.
Decent noodles, though. noodles are there. And there's a couple peas. Only a couple peas, but they're there.
Yeah. It's a soup you would take a spoonful of and go, it's good.
It's good. It's good soup.
All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to season 2, episode 21 of Snubs and Dubs. Can't believe we're in the final 5 movies. That's crazy.
That's insane. Feels like we just started season 2.
I know. Jeez.
Feels like season 1 was 10 years ago, but it feels like we just started season 2.
Yep. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pods, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear guys' thoughts on Chef or on this episode, so please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Windy_Mill. Of course, all of those links are going to be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
5, 6, and...
I want to be great.
And you're not.
We got Buddy Rich here. A little trouble there. You're rushing. Here we go. 5, 6, and... Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will gut you like a pig.
That's right. Next time we're talking about the last Best Picture nominee of this season, Whiplash. So make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.